Hello, this is Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for August 16th, 2019. And I'll start with the article with the headline, Killer Given Two Life Sentences, Dateline Danville. 4 years after the bodies of Theodore Teddy Hill and Zara Law Strickland were discovered in a secluded area west of Danville, each with bullet wounds to the head, Vanessa Morris had a chance to confront her daughter's killer. Mr. Torres, Morris began addressing Glenn T. Torres, Jr., 31 of Indianapolis, at his sentencing hearing Thursday in Vermilion County Circuit Court. You knew that Zara and Tammy were friends since their youth, she said, referring to Torres's girlfriend, and that they attended the same church, sang in the choir together, and were on the usher board at the church, where Tammy's grandmother was an associate minister. Why would you do harm to her and or move her body so that her family wouldn't be able to give her a decent burial? Before Torres was sentenced to two mandatory life sentences in prison, he addressed Morris, Hill's mother, two of the victim's siblings, and Strickland's 11-year-old son, who were in the courtroom. But they didn't get the answers they had hoped for. I'd like to say sorry for y'all's loss, but I stand here an innocent man. I can't give y'all answers. I do not know. I was a scapegoat, he said to the family members. Afterwards, Circuit Judge Nancy Fahey sentenced Torres, formerly of Danville, to the two life sentences. I have no discretion in this case, Fahey said, pointing out that the law demands the harsh sentence for cases so horrific, so heinous, so disgusting, that natural life is the only possible sentence that fits. The judge also said she found a number of aggravating factors to support it, including the nature of the crime, Torres's extensive criminal history, Torres being on parole when the murders occurred, and the need to deter others, and no mitigating factors. On April 23rd, a jury deliberated just under 3 hours before finding Torres guilty of fatally shooting Mr. Hill, 29, and Ms. Strickland, 28, as they were riding in a car on Logan Avenue in Danville in the early morning of August 2nd, 2015, and that he personally fired the weapon that caused their deaths. The couple's bodies, heavily infested by insects, were discovered 2 days later near a tree line at a vacant property at 322 Western Avenue west of town. At Torres's 7-day trial, key prosecution witness Marquis Robinson testified that on August 4th, 2015, his drug dealer, the late Joshua J. Robinson, put out a hit on Hill and Terlandon Gibbons. After Gibbons robbed Joshua Robinson and shot him in the leg the day before, Marquis Robinson also testified that late that at night and into the next morning, he was driving Torres, Mr. Hill, and Miss Strickland in his then-girlfriend's car when Torres shot Mr. Hill in the back of the head, ordered Robinson at gunpoint to drive to the location west of Danville where he dumped the couple's bodies, then ordered him to drive him to his home on the east side of Indianapolis. Earlier, he said that Torres had been offered $5,000 and paid $500 up front to take out Mr. Hill and Gibbons, and that Torres had paid him $200 to drive him around to look for them. Special prosecutors Jonathan McKay, Mary Claire Nicholson, and Kathleen Duig of the Illinois Attorney General's Office also presented physical and forensic evidence, including Torres's fingerprint that was found inside the car. Witness testimony that he tried to sell the car on Craigslist and then retrieve it from an impound company once he learned it was wanted in the police investigation, and other witness testimony, including Marquis Robinson's then-girlfriend and Torres's uncle, who said that Torres confessed to the killings. Prior to the sentencing on Thursday, Fahey denied 2 separate motions to overturn Torres's conviction and grant him a new trial, one of which claimed that trial attorneys Leon Parker and Dan Brown were ineffective. Then it was the victim's family members to speak. I just want you to know you took a piece of my heart, Rita Cooper said to Torres during her victim impact statement. I forgive you because I am a Christian, but it's very hard, Cooper continued through tears. adding his relatives will be able to see him, albeit behind bars. But I never will get to see my son. Sherita Hill described her brother as a jokester, silly, and a good person to be around. She also said he was her protector, friend, and person you could call and he would come running. My protector was stolen from me in the blink of an eye, she said, wiping tears from her eyes. Wesley Laws described his older sister as his second mama. I looked up to Zara, he said, his voice choked with emotion. Zara taught me everything in my life, basketball, track. She taught me how to be a man. She really taught me everything. He recalled the long, agonizing wait on Western Avenue and getting the horrifying news that one of the bodies was indeed his sister's. I had to leave from the crime scene and go tell my sister's kids their mama was murdered and she was never coming home, Laws said. Before Miss Strickland's brother gave his statement, her son Zion tried to offer one to the judge, but was too distraught to do so. Morris said all of her daughter's children have been traumatized, except for the youngest, who was 2 and doesn't remember her at all. She only has pictures of her mother. During her statement, Morris showed photos of her daughter, her birth certificate, her Danville High School diploma, her obituary, and a newspaper clipping on the discovery of the bodies to everyone in the courtroom, later explaining, I wanted them to know Zara was a human being. Morris said her daughter worked 2 jobs to support her children. She had a heart that was so huge, and the biggest smile, Morris said. She was just a blessing to everyone she met. My mother helped you and Tammy financially, and this is the return she gets? She asked Taurus, who did not look away. Why did this even take place? Did you, Mr. Taurus, ever stop to think about your own family? The hurt that you have caused them? After the hearing, she and Cooper said they were pleased with the sentence. We still have the pain, Cooper said. The pain doesn't get any better, but God gives you the strength to deal with it differently now. And now for an article with the headline about a new hotel. Danville, with welcoming Danville signs in the lobby on outdoor seating areas that include a grill and a new hotel smell. Marriott International's Town Place Suites by Marriott Danville opened Thursday afternoon in the city. After a groundbreaking in the spring of 2017, the extended stay Town Place Suites by Marriott is now open at 330 Lynch Road. The 80 all-suite hotel is located adjacent to Holiday Inn Express and Suites and Hampton Inn and Suites. P.B. Patel, Vice President of Sunrise Hospitality Incorporated, said guests have been able to make reservations on the up-and-running website starting August 18th, but they finished sooner than that. He said they're happy to bring Marriott brand to Danville and extended stay suites with kitchens needed in the area. The hotel will operate as a Marriott franchise owned and managed by Sunrise Hospitality, Inc. of Fremont, Ohio. Sunrise also owns the Hampton and Holiday Inn Express. Patel said the hotel has 20 all-suite rooms with full kitchens. There are 18 employees. He said when they started construction, there was no talk then of a Danville casino, possibly near the interstate and Lynch Road exit. He said winter weather caused months of shutdown during construction. The hotel was close to an $8 million project. Patel said the hotel has a state-of-the-art fitness room with personal televisions on the equipment. The breakfast area after use each morning is then hidden in the gathering room area to create a different ambience, and there's also an adjacent meeting room for groups with a television. A press release stated the hotel was, quote, built for travelers looking for a simple and friendly place where they can settle in, keep their routine, and easily connect to the Danville area. We are excited to introduce the Town Place Suites brand to the Danville area, said Diane Mayer, Vice President and Global Brand Manager of Town Place Suites. We want to go above and beyond to do everything we can to make our guests feel comfortable. We encourage our guests to be real and help them to do so by providing a seamless residential atmosphere with a friendly staff who genuinely care about our guests. This is what our brand is all about, and this property is a great example of that. The press release states all service team members are thoroughly trained on local knowledge and look forward to connecting guests to the local area. Our floor-to-ceiling town map also helps guests instantly acclimate themselves to Danville by featuring great places to eat, play, and live, and explore. The Town Place Suites Danville is located just 5 minutes from downtown and offers guests convenient access to Kickapoo State Park, Turtle Run Golf Club, and the David S. Palmer Arena. The hotel has studio and one-bedroom suites with fully equipped kitchens and separate living, working, and sleeping areas in addition to closets with shelf and drawer organizers. There's also a mini market, 24/7 coffee station, indoor swimming pool, outdoor patio with a fire pit and other amenities. The hotel also is pet friendly. A grand opening for the hotel will be conducted at a later date. And the next is a news article with the headline, Growth Not Necessarily Toxic, But People Should Try to Avoid It. With the Salt Fork River green like St. Patrick's Day, local biologists have been investigating how blue-green algae resulting from the lack of rain in the area and high summer temperatures has affected fish and the color of the river. Illinois Department of Natural Resources fish biologist Mike Garthouse said a recent fish kill in Vermilion County in the Salt Fork River was due to the swing in oxygen, but not toxins, from the blue-green algae. He said the light or neon green algae can be seen when there are high nutrients and high water temperatures. You tend to see more of these blooms in the heat of the summertime, Garthouse said. They are not necessarily toxic, but people should try to avoid them, he said, adding that the algae is more common in ponds than rivers and streams. Garthouse said they think the reason some fish in the river have died recently is because of low dissolved oxygen related to the algae blooms. It wasn't toxins, but a swing in the oxygen, he said, adding that cooler weather and rain helps. Kickapoo State Park Site Superintendent Tim Edison said, "We haven't seen it on Kickapoo Lakes right now. We typically don't have that problem." The Illinois Environmental Protection Agency and the Illinois Department of Public Health reminded residents this week to exercise caution if they are planning activities on Illinois waterways, including lakes, rivers, streams, and ponds. According to the press release, during summer months, water conditions are ideal for blue-green algae growth, also known as cyanobacteria, which are microscopic organisms that naturally occur in lakes and streams. Rapid growth of algae is related to as a bloom. While most blue-green algae are a natural part of our ecosystems and are harmless, some can produce toxic chemicals that cause sickness or other health effects in people and pets, depending on the amount and type of exposure. National news reports are stressing that the dangers of algal toxin exposure following reports of illnesses and dog deaths after contact with blue-green algae blooms. Each year, Illinois officials work to raise awareness of the dangers of harmful algal blooms through an annual news release and information made available online. Residents are reminded to use caution when recreating on Illinois waterways, especially at this time of year when blue-green algae blooms are most prevalent. When a blue-green algae bloom has been confirmed, local officials are advised to post appropriate signage to warn residents to avoid contact with affected waters. However, not all blooms are reported to state officials. Therefore, residents must be aware and avoid contact with suspicious-looking water. People who plan to recreate in or on Illinois waters this summer are advised to avoid contact with water that looks like spilled green or blue-green paint, has surface scums, mats, or films, is discolored, or has green-colored streaks, or has greenish globs suspended in the water below the surface. People are also advised to keep children and pets out of the water, not allow pets to drink from the water, and not allow pets to lick their fur after swimming in the water containing a blue-green algae bloom. If in contact with water suspected to have a blue-green algae bloom, rinse off with clean, fresh water as soon as possible. Sensitive individuals, including young children, the elderly, and people with compromised immune systems, are most at risk to adverse health effects attributed to algal toxins. Individuals are most often exposed to algal toxins while swimming or participating in other recreational activities in or on the water. The most common routes of exposure are direct skin contact, accidental ingestion of contaminated water, or accidental inhalation of water droplets in the air. Symptoms of exposure to algal toxins include rashes, hives, diarrhea, vomiting, coughing, and wheezing. More severe symptoms may result from longer or greater amounts of exposure. Activities near, but not in or on a lake or river, such as camping, picnicking, biking, and hiking, are not affected. With all activities, wash your hands before eating if you have had contact with lake or river water or shore debris. If concerned about possible symptoms that are a result of exposure to algal toxins, contact your health care provider or call the Illinois Poison Center at 1-800-222-1222. If your pet experiences symptoms that may be a result of exposure, contact your veterinarian. And now for the obituaries. And the first is for Penny Miller of Tilton, died at 69 on Wednesday, April 14th, 2019. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Robeson Chapel, 103 Douglas Street, Catlin. And the next is for Howard Mason Kunkel, 88 of Vetersburg, who died at on Wednesday, August 14th, 2019. Funeral service will be at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, Saturday, August 17th at First Christian Church, 301 North Mill Street, Vetersburg, Indiana, with Pastor Garland Pinnell officiating. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, that's today, August 16th, at First Christian Church. Burial will be at Memory Garden Cemetery, Rockville, Indiana, with military honors provided by American Legion Post 288 and the U.S. Air Force. Memorial contributions may be given to the Alzheimer's Association. And now we're back to news articles. And the title here is Building Bridges. Dateline Georgetown. You could say 16-year-old Kenny Clarkston is building bridges both literally and figuratively. Literally, in that he has physically constructed a new bridge at the old barn trail at Forest Glen County Preserve, and figuratively, in that the bridge should last well into the lives of his descendants in the future. Clarkston, a junior at Westville High School, took on the project 2 years ago in order to become an Eagle Scout before he ages out at 18. This was a pretty big undertaking to do, said Nick Jurison, Forest Glen trail manager and naturalist and sponsor for Clarkston's project. I didn't want to just put in a little footbridge and be done with it in a day. We're going to build something that is going to be here forever. Jurison said the project was needed long before Clarkston got involved. The former bridge at the site was bowed like a banana and had to be removed. When he would host grade school students on field trips, he'd have to bypass the old bridge site and walk the children along a public road. So when a co-worker brought up Clarkston's name 2 years ago, the duo were ready to get to work. Jurison told Clarkston over the winter to get all his paperwork in order, and then they'd start fundraising. When spring arrived, Clarkston had already raised $4,000. They figured they needed to build a 65-foot-long bridge. They got a materials list together, and then Clarkston got Thomas Excavating and Demolition to donate the web joists that span the bridge. The joists came from the old Edison Elementary School. A big part of this happening was because of Joey Thomas, Jurison said. If he didn't donate the joists, we wouldn't have been able to make this bridge, Clarkson said. That summer, concrete forms were built, rebar was wired in, and concrete poured. Clarkson really had a major hand in the entire project. The only thing he really couldn't be part of was setting those web joints with machinery, Jurison said. He could observe, but he couldn't do it. He drilled the concrete, but certain things he couldn't do. But that's okay. A big part of that project isn't about doing the work. It's about delegating and managing it. He had to keep photos and records the entire time that he'll have to submit to get his Eagle Scout. The duo decided the project would take place in two phases and had to be worked around each of their schedules, while Clarkston also had school and sports going on. The plan involved decking the bridge last year and the handrails, approaches, and signs this year. By last fall, they were almost done. This Saturday, the duo, along with the Conservation District and the Boy Scouts, will celebrate with a ribbon-cutting ceremony. Before the bridge project came along, however, Clarkston had the idea of building a house for a homeless veteran. I'm really thankful for our veterans, Clarkston said. They risked their lives to keep us free. He talked to a realtor, but the cash amounts he would have to raise were disheartening. That's when he met Jurison. I thought the bridge would be fun because it could last a long time, and I'd have a fun time with Nick while building it and get to use more tools and learn more skills throughout the build. It was really fun, Clarkston said. I was a bit disappointed in not getting the house, but this was a big project to tackle, and it was a great challenge to take on. It was awesome. Okay, and next is a short article with the headline, Chris Plans Lunch. Chris Healthy Aging Center, 309 North Franklin Street, will host a luncheon at 11 a.m. Wednesday. Johnson Flanagan, Faith and Action Coordinator at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center, will speak about the Instacart program, a grocery delivery service for seniors, followed by Chris Bungo. To register, call Chris at 443-2999. And now, an opinion piece. It didn't have a title. And it reads, I have never been a big fan of Bernie Sanders. His authoritarian tendencies and aggressive attacks on any who would disagree have outweighed the good in him. The good is his working class voice, emphasis on economic issues, and some solid ideas. But his recent lashing out at the Washington Post, where he accused the progressive Beacon of punishing him, carried an air of populist paranoia, so much so he's being likened to Donald Trump. Sanders' day in the sun was the 2016 presidential race when he seriously challenged Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton for the party nomination. That day is past. Among Democrats, Sanders trails Joe Biden by 13 percentage points, according to a recent Money Consult poll. Elizabeth Warren, meanwhile, is almost nipping at his heels. Sanders may do okay in the first two contests, Iowa and New Hampshire, where the liberal white gentry wields many Democratic votes. But he will definitely crash in the Southern primaries to follow, where African Americans are the deciders. Sanders simply does not bond with black voters who tend to be more conservative. Quinnipiac put him at only 8% among black Democratic primary voters. Sanders did himself no good in 2016 when, having been trounced by Clinton in the Southern primaries, he waved away those contests as unimportant. In his worldview, what helps him matters. What doesn't help him doesn't matter. You're for him or against him. Still, it was surprising to hear Sanders decry persecution by the Washington Post. Amazon paid no taxes last year, he told the crowd in New Hampshire. And then I wonder why the Washington Post, which is owned by Jeff Bezos, who owns Amazon, doesn't write particularly good articles about me. The Post publishes far less good articles about Trump, and Trump wields a far greater threat against Bezos' business interests than Sanders ever could. The parallels between Trump and Sanders blaming liberal news sources for their setbacks is pretty glaring. Trump issues frequent tweets against the Amazon Washington Post. But it's not just the Post picking on Sanders, according to his campaign. It's quote-unquote the media. The hyper-overreaction from many in the media to Senator Sanders' critique reveals a bias, according to campaign manager Thaiz Shakir, as reported by Politico. There is a sneering, contemptuous disdain that infuses those comments, and a willingness to put words into Bernie's mouth that he just didn't use. Whoa! Post executive editor Marty Baron would have none of this. Senator Sanders is a member of a large club of politicians of every ideology who complain about our coverage, Barron said in a statement. Contrary to the conspiracy theory, the senator seems to favor Jeff Bezos allows our newsroom to operate with full independence, as our reporters and editors can attest. Sanders supporters now have Elizabeth Warren to carry the torch on such ideas as Medicare for All. Not that it's wise politics. It polls poorly once the public understands it would mean losing private coverage. Warren has an electoral advantage over Sanders in calling herself a capitalist as opposed to a socialist. Her speeches are also less of a looping tape. Interestingly, though, more Sanders supporters back Biden as their second choice than they do Warren. This may reflect Sanders' populist appeal to working-class voters rather than interest in his programs. Sanders was never much of a team player in the Democratic Party. Indeed, he seeks the affiliation only when he's running for office. Anyway, his comment is on the way down. It's legacy time. Sanders should stop the angry thrashing and start a slow stroller for the gates with dignity. And this is another opinion column with the headline, Danville Rescue Mission, Christian Ministry for Residents in Need. Rees Harland finds himself in need of the Danville Rescue Mission's discipleship program. He recently finished the Danville Rescue Mission's discipleship program, rented his own apartment, and has a new job at Save-A-Lot. Since 1980, the mission has been an emergency shelter where police agencies and churches have been able to send people when they need a roof over their heads and a meal. The mission serves 2 meals a day to the general public and 3 meals a day to the transients and program men who are staying at the mission. The average number is around 35 people at a meal. The meals served are well balanced. During the summer, the mission often finds families coming in with children, and even children come in by themselves. Ricky Booz is the mission's main cook. He is an ordained minister who has a testimony of the Lord's changing power in his life. The Reverend Daniel Offit, the mission director and CEO, oversees the Danville Rescue Mission's ministries that includes the community thrift store and the Day Spring Woman and Children's Shelter. He has staff and many volunteers who help in the community thrift store, the chapel services, and the discipleship program, as well as Dayspring. Because the mission is a Christian ministry, it does not receive government funding. Like any Christian ministry, they rely on the Christian community to provide funding and hands-on help. The annual fundraising banquet is planned for October 21st, and reservations can be made at the mission office. I can't finish this because of time constraints. Sorry. I look forward to reading with you again soon. This has been Lois Pausch reading the Vermillion County News for Friday, August the 16th.